And hello and welcome back to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Anna Mae Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon.
And Peter, I hope you are rested from our vacation last week.
Oh, I'm rested.
the very difficult November holiday period. Anyway.
One midterm period, too, for the students.
That's very true. It's been a while since I had to worry about midterms, at least in real life. I always kind of dream about them every now and then, so... Thanks for the lifelong PTSD, University of Guelph. End Credits is your local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here Thursday at 10 a.m. to talk about the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new sci-fi superhero buddy comedy, Thor Ragnarok. That's a description I never thought I'd use to describe a Thor movie, but there you go. That's in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to tackle some movie news from the past week, including Rancor on the Fast and the Furious set. It's already making me so upset. It's one of the biggest movie franchises, but could it come apart because of it's not such a cozy family behind the scenes? And then Blockbuster, it's still around in a couple places, and people are apparently still loving the video store experience, but do they really? Or is it just more self-obsessed nostalgia? We'll talk about that in the back half of the, or in the first half of the show, I should say. This is what happens when you take a week off. You forget all your little... cues and things. What hasn't been forgotten in the past week, though, is the point of starting this show, Peter, to me was, like, on my other radio show, we talk about, like, serious depressing things week after week, and it never seems to get better. And so I thought, let's do a pop culture show. We'll talk about fun things. And then now this happens, and, you know, it's... we do record this in advance, so if there are, like, updates, forgive us. But as it stands right now, we were just talking before the show, catching up that...
especially in the movie scene in Hollywood. It's just it's not doing good.
Right. So it was over a week ago, that the first allegations against Kevin Spacey came out. Mm. Anthony Rapp, who is famous, probably most famous for Rent, slightly as famous now for being on Star Trek Discovery, accused Kevin Spacey of inappropriate acts when he was 14, when Rapp was 14, not when Spacey was 14, hence the inappropriateness. Since then, several more people have come out, including people, you know, on the set of House of Cards, which is, depending on who you are listening to, either Kevin Spacey was fired from last weekend, or he's just on suspension. Either of which, I'm not sure how House of Cards proceeds without the main character.
Oh, I don't think it will. I think it's just done permanently.
Yeah.
And they definitely fired him. He was also, his upcoming Netflix movie has been canceled too.
Is that true?
So yeah, I think he was definitely fired from House of Cards.
Yeah, it just seemed it was the production company that, after the Netflix announcement that he was fired, the production company, which is called MRC, I think, said in a release for them, they're like, no, he's just, like, suspended for a while. But I mean, in either case, this was supposed to be the last season of House of Cards, which was an announcement that came out pretty quickly after Rapp's allegations.
Oh, I don't think it was supposed to be the finale.
No. Oh, no. I think they wanted to. To get it done, I think they probably somewhat idealistically, given the tenor and the climate and how these things go, that a Rapp's allegation was going to be the only, and that they would quickly take action, put a lid on House of Cards, and then that would be that.
But that's not what happened.
No.
There was still many more after. Oh, it's still happening.
Yeah.
After this, once I look at my phone, there will probably be a couple more towards Kevin Spacey.
Sadly.
Mm-hmm. Like younger males too. The one made a comment about how, as long as it's under 30, then Kevin Spacey is he's good for it. He's
just so gross. It sounds so gross.
Yeah.
Especially considering his American Beauty character.
Oh, I know. And well, yeah, he's actually kind of like himself in that film.
It's like I guess he went method for that, and it's been living the method for 20 years.
Possibly. Although it seemed to have happened way before that too.
Yeah.
85, true. I think.
Yeah. I don't know how to feel about it. It's just, you know, I think this goes for just about anything, whether you're talking about Mel Gibson, whether you're talking about Bill Cosby. you know, can you still go back and look at their works? Because, you know, Kevin Spacey's done so much.
Oh, there's
great
so
work.
Many issues of that nature.
Including Baby Driver came out earlier this year. Everyone loves Baby Driver. Now, how are we supposed to feel about it?
Oh, one of the main, right. Yeah. He is one of the main characters. Oh, yeah. Well, there's always been so many issues of that nature. Like, Sean Connery, you know, has done, I don't think he's been accused of anything sexual, but, like, abuse, right?
Right.
Sean Penn, like, hit Madonna with a baseball bat, right? And
yeah.
Madonna screwed him over a bit, too, but deserved it. People still love seeing Sean Penn in films. People still love Sean Connery. But this is even more major, or at least, I don't know, to a sexual degree and a part of the huge boom that's going on in Hollywood.
Well, part of it is the being kept under wraps part, because
yeah.
One of the revelations was somebody said on Reddit that Kevin Spacey had, you know, been inappropriate with them, and they were quickly shouted down. It's like, that's not true. And
well, because people loved him. People yeah. thought that he was, I thought he was just a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nicer to some.
Yeah, nicer to some.
But it's part of a whole litany that's come out in the last week, and we've had Jeremy Piven. There are two women who have come out against him now. Actress Cassidy Freeman was the second. The first
against
one was
Jeremy Piven?
Yeah, Ariana Bellamy. Oh, you didn't?
Oh.
Yeah, it was Ariana Bellamy who's accused Jeremy Piven of groping her on the set of Entourage, which is like doubly gross when you think about Entourage.
Ari Gold, what are you doing? I have a poster of him in my bathroom. Now I gotta take that off.
But we're gonna leave aside while you have a picture of Ari Gold in your bathroom. But there's also Dustin Hoffman. He's accused of harassing a 17-year-old intern on the set of a TV movie in '85. Mm-hmm.
And the Ben Affleck. John Mulaney claimed that Ben Affleck squeezed his wife's behind. Whatever the most appropriate way to say it is. He's been doing things like that for a long time.
Yeah, that came out after the Weinstein. The Weinstein thing is actually a month old now.
Is it?
Can you believe that? It's like 1 month from Sunday was the original New York Times story.
My goodness.
Like, yeah. Time flies. And then Brett Ratner is someone else. Several actresses, including Olivia Munn and Natasha Henstridge, have come out. Though he's taken the unusual step of suing one of the accusers, and it's not one of the famous ones. I can't remember her name, and I had it written down here. Oh, her name's Melanie Roller.
Okay.
She lives in Hawaii, and he's suing her for some reason. She did a post on Facebook accusing him, although he's been pulled. Andy Dick.
Well, that's been going on for decades. But and he just doesn't deny it either.
I know, it's not the latest thing about Andy Dick. He has like a rainbow of charges and things about him personally, but he was fired from his movie, and it was over sexual harassment and misconduct allegations on the set of that movie.
Yeah, well, that's so good. If he was, you know, sexually harassing them, I'm glad they got him off. But the Andy Dick thing didn't even surprise me.
And then there was producer David Gillard, who was accused of raping an actress who was in Atomic Blonde. Her name is Jessica Barth. So he's been pulled from his production company. He's been suspended or fired. And then getting even ickier, there's Corey Feldman, who's...
He's bringing it back up, right?
Right.
He used to talk about that issue of, was it Corey Haim that used to get sexually abused?
Yeah.
But I believe he denied it at first, right? But Corey Feldman wants to...
Yeah, and this is something Corey Feldman's been trying to get going for years, but now, you know, it's
well, he's
found,
able to bring it back in a more major way, because it's what's going on in Hollywood.
It's found voice, because people people thought, like, Corey Feldman, whatever, which is kind of sad, you know. That in itself kind of speaks up the Hollywood way of kind of using up people and then kind of throwing them away. I think the Coreys are partly too...
Especially children, too.
Yeah,
children
stars, mm-hmm. yeah, are two really kind of the perfect examples of that. But, I mean, he's finding a new audience for his allegations. And he was also someone else who was shut down. He did an interview with Barbara Walters, and he tried to bring this up, and she shut him down.
Wow, that's not
so
cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's also gross, and then...
And more and more is happening. It's starting to be more revealed within the other media cultures, too, like the music culture. There's starting to be a lot of sexual harassments. I'll just quickly mention the one because this is CFRU and people used to be obsessed with them. The one band Crystal Castles,
right.
Ethan Kath, the main male, has been accused of, since she was 15, sexually harassing Alice Glass in an awful way. So I'm not glad it happened, but I'm glad that was brought up in the music industry.
Yeah.
I hope it comes up soon in the TV industry, especially the hip-hop industry. There's been a lot of comments about how it's still one of the worst for female abuse. So I hope all of Hollywood eventually is revealed how disgusting it is on the inside.
Yeah, it seems like there's no bottom to the disgustingness, because even Uma Thurman was doing an interview for, she's in a Broadway play, and she said that she's not ready to speak to things she's experienced, but she will speak to it. So, you know, I wonder what Uma Thurman is going to bring up if it's somebody new, because I have a feeling that if it's someone who's already been mentioned, she probably would have lent her voice or her support to those accusers. So I have a feeling that maybe she's sitting on some other people and maybe waiting to see
someone major.
Yeah, who else might come out? Wow. Of this mess. But yeah, it's just, it's so, it just makes you feel so terrible. First of all, it makes you feel terrible that for the women who went through this, suffered in silence, really. And it also makes you feel terrible that it seems like whole industries have been built around keeping silence.
It's awful that they all felt like they had to keep it hidden just because of Hollywood, just because it's the only way that you're able to survive, to become an A-list or even B-list, D-list. It's,
yeah. You suck it up, and then you put it in a...
Yeah, the recent House of Cards people haven't revealed their names or anything like that, because then, even though most people are hating Kevin Spacey right now, they'd still have trouble getting on other sets.
Well, I wonder if it's even, like, you know, if we're even talking about actors, if we're talking about, like, PAs, we're talking about gaffers, we're talking about, you know, the actual machine, the people who make TV shows happen, you know, whether that's, you know, assistant editors or the catering people, even... you know,
key grips.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, predators like to go after the people who don't have as much power, which is why you had Harvey Weinstein, yeah, chase, ingenues and actresses trying to break into the business. And it also makes you wonder how many of those people who could have been, you know, great actors, could have been great writers or had some kind of role in making great art, who, you know, were turned off because they encountered some gross old guy like Harvey Weinstein with his open bathrobe. It's, you know, it's just icky, and it turns something that's supposed to be fun, and, you know, House of Cards is supposed to be this thing that's like the dark mirror to our dark reality. It's like our own political process is utter and complete garbage, but at least we can watch House of Cards and enjoy Frank Underwood, you know, undermining things with a smirk on his face. And now you can't, because you know what's behind the smirk of, you know, the Kevin Spacey's inner smirk.
Yeah, I was, because of Neve Campbell being in the fourth season, I was thinking about going through House of Cards, but definitely not now. Definitely not now. But the one thing we probably will never find it out, but I'm curious if he knew the kid was 14, because that could bring it to an even worse level. That's,
well, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, you don't ask for a birth certificate, right, if you're hitting on somebody or preying on somebody. But if you are knowingly preying on a child, and 14 does count as a child in the letter of the law, then that takes it up to an other level, which isn't, if you know, if he's preying on teenagers, that's especially, not that any of this isn't,
it's
terrible,
disgusting,
but that's another level of disgust. I mean, it's just, they keep shoveling more disgust on top of this. It drives you crazy. We'll have to leave that there and talk about some other disappointing news.
Ooh.
You know, when you watch a movie and it's about family and it's about them driving cars,
bromance,
and like just defeating international supervillains through the power of family and awesome car driving, and you find out they're not a family behind the scenes.
I know.
It's just, so I wanted to talk about this because it's like, it's not the first thing that's come out about the Fast and the Furious franchise. The latest movie came out earlier this year, The Fate of the Furious, which was number 8. But Tyrese Gibson goes on Instagram this week, and he goes on. He says, you know what? If Dwayne Johnson is in number nine, I'm not in number nine. And it had to do with – it seemed to be economic because I guess Tyrese Gibson's really depending on those Fast and Furious paychecks.
Well, yeah. I haven't seen him in anything else. He's been in other things, but that's pretty much all he's known for.
But, yeah, so they're doing a spinoff of Dwayne Johnson's character.
I heard about that.
Yeah, that's coming out in 2019. The Fast and Furious movies have been doing like every 2 years pretty – tightly, so
yeah, pretty steadily.
They're doing the Dwayne Johnson spinoff in 2019, and then the Fast 9 movies move back to 2020. And Tyrese Gibson's like, that selfish rock.
Yeah, he's probably just upset that he's gonna have to wait longer to do Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, but it's
well, and he's probably also venting the drama and his sadness of his wife, the issue with his wife, right?
Right.
Like, it's going through the divorce. That's what he's dealing with right now.
Yeah, so he's just
pissed about everything.
Yeah, and they have made up since. Breaking news, they have made up.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least Tyrese Gibson and one of The Rock's people have made up.
I think him and his wife made up yesterday around 4:32.
Right. That was on Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, I got this guy on Instagram.
But yeah, it's just this is the latest thing because there was during the shooting of the eighth movie, there was some kind of beef between Vin Diesel and Dwayne Johnson.
That's the one that really broke my heart. I don't know why, but I thought they like were bros. I thought they were best friends. I thought they like hang out. I don't know. I picture them having like coffee together, just being bros. But no, that
I don't
really,
think they're having Coronas together.
Yeah,
they're
Coronas.
Not drinking coffee together. It's definitely Corona. Even at like 8 o'clock in the morning, it's Corona because we were up all night driving. I don't know. But then in the summer, Michelle Rodriguez came out and said, you know, if there aren't more roles or if there aren't better roles for the ladies in Fast 9, I'm out.
I get that. I understand that.
Well, I get it too, especially after I finally watched Fate of the Furious a couple of weeks ago, and there's a pretty blatant fridging of one of the female characters.
Yeah.
She was definitely fridged, and that kind of made me sad because it is so blatant. And in the midst of it, you had Charlize Theron in it playing this pretty badass villain,
mm-hmm.
which should have been a good thing. But yeah, it's I wonder how much of this is like the success getting to the you know, going like affecting how the franchise layout, because this is a franchise that every movie comes out makes $1.5 billion easy.
Oh yeah.
And I wonder if success is like getting to their head where you have like Michelle Rodriguez making appropriate, I think appropriate demands.
Oh yeah.
And you have, you know,
cuz she's been the only really central like main female character.
That's right.
The other ones are, you know, more the wife or just more background female characters.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Jordana Brewster mostly sat out part 6 and part 7, which was kind of sad because she's a mom now, and moms, I guess, can't be put in danger.
Yeah.
Other than the Natalie Emanuel character, who also didn't have a big part in Fast 8. Did you see Fast 8?
No, I didn't see Fast 8.
Okay.
I've seen all the other ones, though.
Yeah, so she didn't really have a big part in it either. But having said that, yeah, I understand Michelle Rodriguez's demands, but it makes me sad that, you know, this isn't one of those pre-planned franchises, right? This wasn't like, remember when Power Rangers came out earlier this year and like Chaim Saban said, like, this is going to be like the first of 7 Power Rangers movies.
Nope.
And
I didn't get that.
But this is like an entirely organic franchise that started with this like stupid Point Break ripoff.
Yep.
And has grown into this like huge James Bondian franchise.
Yeah, Too Fast, Too Furious, just because of the name.
Yeah,
people started loving it, and yeah, it's continued to grow. Each one makes more money.
So you know, instead of like coming together, on top of it all, like the underlying thing is family. I'd like to see one of those like word clouds that shows like how. I want to know how big the word family is in that word cloud.
Yeah,
because it said like every other word, but. You know, it's such a great message because it's a diverse film cast too. You know, there's so many actors of color in it.
Very, very diverse. Always has been too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think you know it. I guess I'd like to say it was because Paul Walker was too white, but that he had to compensate. But it was it's the message of the film is family. It's a great diverse cast, and it's an example of like just, you know, being able to roll with it. and let the chips fall, and just finding a voice and finding a method that people liked, and then
that everybody likes,
and it was able to take off. And then to kind of see it, it's obviously not falling apart. Like, nobody's going to let this fall apart.
No, but they're talking a bit too much about their relationships as themselves, as right. the actors, where I just want to picture them as the characters.
Yeah, and having fun behind the scenes and drinking Coronas.
Yeah.
I'm okay
with Michelle Rodriguez doing whatever she does, because she's just a character herself, too.
She's great, yeah.
She's a lot like her character in Fast and the Furious, and especially Law. She's a tough one, so... I'm glad that she made that comment, but I think Tyrese Gibson should shush. I think he should tone down a bit on his insults towards The Rock.
And what I will say is, I think the Fast and the Furious franchise can continue without Tyrese Gibson. It can't continue 100%. Without Dwayne Johnson.
So it can't. No.
nobody's gonna watch Fast 9 if Tyrese Gibson isn't there. You're gonna be like, hey, wasn't Tyrese Gibson in these?
Yeah, I would.
No
watch
offense
it if
to
Ludacris
Tyrese
wasn't
Gibson.
In it, but yeah.
Yeah, Ludacris is...
He's damn good in it.
He's great. Yeah, Ludacris is great.
Yeah.
Chris Bridges. Speaking of things that aren't what they used to be, video stores. This is kind of bizarre. There was this Vice video where they went to a Blockbuster store in Alaska, and everyone's like, there's Blockbuster videos in Alaska? Let's everybody go. I mean, this kind of strikes me. Did you hear about the thing with the Szechuan sauce at McDonald's and the Rick and Morty fans?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Where, like,
too bad I didn't go and try it. Although I don't think they did it in Canada.
I don't think they did it in Canada either. But McDonald's did this promotion. I don't know, like, unofficial promotion. Because there was a joke in a Rick and Morty episode about the Szechuan sauce. That came, I think it was when Mulan was released. Forget about the fact that McDonald's had all these horrible puns about, like, walk, don't run to McDonald's for our Mulan promotions. All these horrible racist puns. But McDonald's released this, re-released the Szechuan sauce, and people were, like, lining up for it at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Rick and Morty's booming. And if it's mentioned in Rick and Morty, whether they have interest in the taste or not, they're going to eat it, right?
And, well... let's say McDonald's seriously underestimated how many Rick and Morty fans there were, because that kind of blew up, and McDonald's had Szechuan sauce all over their face about it.
They should just bring it back permanently.
They'll bring it back permanently. It will sell good for like 3 days, and then everyone will have gotten their fix, and it'll be over.
Keep doing it until Rick and Morty's done.
But that'd be smart. To bring that around to the Blockbuster thing, that's what it kind of smells like to me. It's like people would, if a Blockbuster video opened like in downtown LA tomorrow, people would be like going in there and looking around. But I guarantee you the business model would fizzle in like 3 weeks. Because I saw that I worked at Thomas Video till the end.
Did you?
Yeah.
At Thomas Video?
Yeah.
Oh.
I worked there for like a year before I closed, but I would see that. I would see people come and go like, oh, it's a video store. Let's check it out. And then they wouldn't rent anything. It happened a lot. So I think people like to be like that kind of – it's like a museum, right? It's like people like to look at the exhibit. They like to look at that slice of the past, but they don't like living there.
I don't know. I don't know if it's just nostalgia for the people in Alaska. I'm not going to lie. I miss Blockbuster. And when you think about it, like the movies, why would I miss Blockbuster for the movies? We've got Netflix. We've got all that jazz, right? I miss Blockbuster for the video games. I don't want to keep having to spend like $70 on every PS4 game. I could just rent it, you know, most games. Like, you can rent it for a week. You can beat the game. You can bring it back. I loved that. You can, like, I guess, rent on the PSN and on Xbox, but it's more expensive. And I think to be able to do that, you have to pay the monthly internet for both those. So I'd be okay if there was still a Blockbuster or if Roger still rented video games.
EB Games doesn't rent for games?
I'm not
Microplay?
Sure. Maybe Microplay might. Microplay might.
Okay.
I'll check
I'm not up on the latest video games, so I have no cause to rent them. But you're right. I mean, that's another area.
Mm-hmm.
I know that back in the day, Thomas would rent CDs.
Oh, Thomas rented everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I miss Thomas. Also, Alaska, apparently the internet costs like ridiculously more than it does in any other state or any other province, which is saying a lot in Canada.
Yeah. which is why the 5 out of 10 surviving blockbusters.
Yeah,
are in
exactly. I think if my guess would be it's a lot of elderly people going to it.
Sure.
Yeah,
we would get a lot of the, I would say the median age of renters at Thomas was probably 45, 50. But that's because, you know, the older people aren't necessarily internet savvy or even suspicious of, you know, because Netflix asks for, you know, a credit card, and mostly streaming sites do. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a part of seniors. I do understand, you know, being suspicious of putting your personal information online. I actually pay for my Netflix through my PayPal account.
Oh, okay. Well, that's safer, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I'm a little bit internet savvier than the average retiree. So,
they should build a retirement home. Buy them. The Velasquez building new retirement homes. Put them close to the Blockbusters.
Yeah. But what I will say is that this is not dead. If you go to the Guelph Public Library site and look at one of the new releases there, it's like the waiting list is sometimes 70, 80, 100 people long. Which if you let's say 10 copies of a movie, 2 days to borrow it, you know, you could be waiting for like a month to get
a
new release.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the appetite isn't there, but I do wonder, you know, maybe that has to do with maybe the online aspect of where you can save something online. You couldn't necessarily do that at Thomas. Thomas wasn't, set up that way, and maybe that just depends on the approach. Another interesting approach is that there are video stores in the States, and this was kind of a trend start by a store called Scarecrow Video in Seattle, and it became a nonprofit. They reclassified themselves as like a nonprofit film library and resource. So
is it just like some dude's house where he lets people borrow his Blu-rays and DVDs?
No, it's I think it's the same storefront. They have all this their library there, but instead of being a business, they've reclassified themselves as a library. I think
so. More like Thomas, like Thomas Video.
Well, I think the model is kind of like, what if Thomas Video became like a library?
Oh, okay.
So where I'm not sure if they charge for rental still. I imagine if they were a nonprofit, they'd probably, if they were charging for rentals, it'd probably be to like pay for their expenses and their, but you know, being a nonprofit would also, and a cultural nonprofit at that, would allow them access to certain grants as well. So maybe they don't charge for videos, but this is interesting. There's a Portland store called Movie Madness.
It does surprise me that the two you've mentioned are in Seattle and Portland. Not surprise me.
Yeah, hipster town. But but the Movie Madness one also has like movie memorabilia and stuff, because this guy. Who owned Movie Madness? he was like making $1 million a year after Blockbuster closed, after the chain folded in 2010, because he was like the only video store in Portland after that.
Lucky guy.
So so he's able to go out and buy all this movie memorabilia, and so it's not just about the actual discs and the cassettes. It's also about all these other things that went along with it. So I mean, I find that interesting that. You know, I was prepared to write that the whole Blockbuster thing off as nostalgia, but
one last thing about Blockbuster, excluding the nostalgia, special features, bonus features,
sure.
Deleted scenes. You don't get that on Netflix. If for some Netflix originals, they'll have like an extra episode that covers all of those things. But like every DVD had like special features, right? Even if it was just like commentary or something small, and you can't do that on Netflix.
I think
most people don't miss that.
Right.
But I miss it.
I think Apple offers chances to do that on iTunes. There's some purchases you can get that stuff, like it features special bonus features and things.
Okay.
So it's not all gone.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
And speaking of not all gone, here's a bit of musical nostalgia. Because I figured we're going to talk about Thor and what says Thor more than hammer. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. My music hits me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. What a mind to ride. Such, and this is
can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know you can't touch this. Look in my eyes, man, you can't touch this. Yo, let me bust the funky lyrics. Break it down. Stop. Have a time.
Side by side forever, but at the end of the day, you're you and I'm me. And I know maybe there's still good in you, but let's be honest, our paths diverged a long time ago. But yeah. It's probably for the best that we never see each other again. That's what you always wanted. Hey, let's do get help.
What?
Get help.
No.
Come on, you love it.
I hate it.
It's great. It works every time.
It's humiliating.
Do you have a better plan?
No.
We're doing it.
We are not doing get help.
Get help! Please! My brother's dying! Get help! Help him! Oh, classic.
That is a scene from Thor Ragnarok. It is the third in the series based on the Marvel Comics character. And it's directed by Taika Waititi and stars Chris Hemsworth, Tom Hiddleston, Kate Blanchett, Tessa Thompson, Jeff Goldblum, Carl Urban, Mark Ruffalo, and Anthony Hopkins. And I don't know how you feel about the Thor series thus far.
I thought the first one was really good. The second one was all right. But yeah. This one, I loved it.
Yeah, I think the first one did really good with the characters and building the character motivations. Mm-hmm. And then the second one did a bit better with, the world building.
Yeah.
Like Asgard felt more real, I think, in the second one.
But it was pretty completely within Asgard, right?
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
And then the climax took place on Earth. And this one, the first two films felt like they did not sort of capture the character well or the world well. They were not 100%. They weren't batting 1,000. Let's use sports metaphors because they're fun. But
Thor wasn't portrayed as he should have been in the first two. They didn't go in-depthly enough into him as a singular character.
Right. It was always about how he bounced off mm-hmm. Loki, how he bounced off the Natalie Portman love interest or the other Earth characters or how he is with his father. And I think that's – and then, of course, when you get into the Avengers movie, it's how he fits in with the rest of the Avengers. But what I think I found with this movie is that in terms of dealing with Thor as a singular character and developing him and his own personal motivations, not just as one of the guardians of the realms and as the son of the king and
more an individual.
Yeah. So it's, and plus the change of tone. What I like about this is that, the first maybe Kevin Feige, the producer, saw the first two films like, okay, they're not working 100%. Maybe if we throw a wild card into this, like Taika Waititi, mm-hmm. who's done these great films. Like he worked on Flight of the Conchords, mm-hmm. but he also did these great films, What We Do in the Shadows, which is a vampire
documentary.
He's
doing a sequel too.
He has announced a sequel dealing with werewolves, which was kind of teased at the end of What We Do in the Shadows.
He's able to make films that are a perfect mix of hilarious, but well done too. You get into the characters.
Yeah.
You respect the film. It's not just, like a just endless amount of laughs. It's emotional too.
Right, and you saw that in his last film, Hunt for the Wilder People, which is about Sam Neill is like this grizzled old guy and who's in this kid, and they're kind of like wandering around the woods, and they become like these like weird celebrities because they basically become like the Bigfoot of New Zealand, where people have these weird encounters with them. But then at the heart of it is this like as it sort of builds towards the end is how important the relationship becomes between Sam Neill and that boy, mm-hmm. and it's pretty heartbreaking in the end too, which which catches you by surprise that it's managed to worm its way into that.
It's hard to do that
emotional
with the comedy
side. Yeah, as all this hilarity has been happening too, and I think that's what kind of makes this work here.
Yeah, and it wasn't just little puns like all the other Marvel films.
Right.
There were some really darn good jokes, well written, and it was hilarious.
Well, you know, there were some. We were talking about how YTD plays one of the guys on this alien planet, Korg, who's one of the alien gladiators.
Yeah, the best character in the film.
Yeah.
The real, true main character.
Because of his revolution.
Yeah, all. Exactly.
But yeah, it's partially based on a comic book storyline, Planet Hulk, where Hulk ends up on an alien world where he ends up being king. He works his way up from gladiator to king. And it's funny how they managed to turn a Hulk story into the best Thor movie. But yeah, the Korg character is great. Just speaking of all these little asides, when Loki appears to Thor while he's in prison and he disappears and he runs into frame, he goes, "Piss off, ghost!" there's little bits like that are hilarious. But you're right. A lot of the humor is based in like that scene we played with Thor and Loki launching this little escape plan with the get help gag.
Well written, not just little puns that even if you don't understand the pun, because they're able, in the other Marvel films, they're able to write the kind of quick jokes where you laugh even if you haven't heard it.
Right.
It's just they have the kind of jokes that just force you to burst out a little, huh? You know? at the least. And even though it wasn't that funny, it's.
Or if it's a reference back to something. And there was a bit of that in this film with.
There is in all Marvel films. But it's the best well-written comedy of all the Marvel films thus far, I would say.
And yeah, because it does come from that place of character. Mm-hmm.
But deep, too.
Oh,
emotionally
sure.
Emotionally deep, too.
Yeah, a lot of it is. Yeah, it's surprisingly deep. The story of Valkyrie, who is sort of the main female character that sides with Thor.
Oh, Tessa Thompson?
Tessa Thompson, who's great. Her introduction is flat out hilarious, where she comes out of the spaceship drinking and then she takes a step and falls. But then that's immediately followed by this badass thing where she fights all these sort of scavengers.
She gets a good amount of screen time too. And
she gets a great backstory too that is like incredibly tragic. And you know, help feeds her own individual heroism. She's not just there to help Thor. She is there trying to sort of reclaim some of her own, warrior spirit, if you will.
She had her own storyline. She wasn't just some character going to help out Thor.
Exactly.
And she's obviously, it was a build up to, she's definitely going to be in the Infinity War and the other MCU films.
I think everyone's in Infinity War.
Yeah.
So she was a great addition. Cate Blanchett
was
so,
I know. I didn't even realize it was her till halfway through, and then I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. That's why I'm loving her. That's why she's so great.
She plays Hela, the goddess of death.
I got creeped out. I got scared.
I didn't get scared.
Like a horror movie type of scare, right, but I was like, oh, jeez.
But she's got such presence.
Mm-hmm.
She just she literally sashays into the film, where she kind of just is revealed to Thor and Loki at one point, at a pivotal point that kind of involves a spoiler. But she just like sashays into the film, and she's like, okay, now I'm the goddess of death, and I'm your queen, and so you two bow down. And they're like, no, and she's like, well, now it's a fight. And she immediately undermines Thor and Loki, these two, powerful characters, and so it immediately sets a tone. And the thing I will say is, I'm not sure, I've seen a lot of people say online and things like, oh, she's like one of the best Marvel villains. Of course, the Marvel movies have had a kind of a villain problem that they're kind of underdeveloped. I'm not sure that is not true necessarily in this case.
I don't think she's the best villain thus far.
I don't think she's, but she was, as a character in terms of motivation wise, I don't think she was terribly well developed, but the fact it was Cate Blanchett playing her and the Cate Blanchett-ness of it.
The character was great, but
her
storyline within the film was the one that didn't fully fit in.
Right. Yeah. But she basically overcomes the demerits, the typical villain problems, I think, with Marvel films, because she's Cate Blanchett and she was just awesome from beginning to end.
Oh, yeah.
especially since, and this isn't a spoiler, but it's pretty early on, she destroys the hammer, Thor's hammer, Thor's famous hammer.
Yeah, just to show how strong she is, how she's definitely stronger than Thor and Loki.
It immediately sets a tone, and you know, she's just so great during that scene because she doesn't say anything. She just grabs the hammer mm-hmm. and just kind of smiles. It's like, oh yeah, this is happening. I'm tougher than both yous. Mm-hmm. And she's just so great. I loved it. I loved her.
I thought she was I loved Carl Urban in it too.
Carl Urban was
just
great.
Her and Carl Urban hanging out. And the way she treated Carl Urban, man.
That was a great introduction for Carl Urban character when he's in the Bifrost room, and he's like, I got these from Texas. And he's got like all these like goods that he's pillaged from across the universe using the Bifrost. And I'm not sure how he would kind of be allowed to get away with that, or how someone would narc on him at some point. I mean, because as we saw from the last Thor movie, Loki's usurped Odin.
Yeah.
He's banished Odin and has taken Odin's place, looking like Odin, and he's put the Carl Urban, I can't remember his name, Scourge, I think his name is.
Yeah, Scourge.
He put him in charge, and so he's got these machine guns. He's like, I call this one Dez, and I call this one Destroy. And that actually plays into the plot later. And
It does. They did a good job with his character.
Yeah, they did a really good job with him. Grandmaster.
Played by
Jeff Goldblum.
How did we not even mention him yet? Of course, that was probably my favorite part of the film.
It was just enough Jeff Goldblum.
It was the perfect amount.
Yes, it was the perfect amount of Jeff Goldblum mm-hmm. doing Jeff Goldblum things.
A bit more, it would have taken away some of the serious needed in the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know he was in it the perfect amount. And he was a great actor as usual. He was exactly what you would expect from Jeff Goldblum, which is, for me, never disappointing.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the actress who kind of plays as, like, his main bodyguard. Mm-hmm. And she's like, the slaves are escaping. He's like, I don't like that word. She's like, fine, the prisoners with jobs.
Yeah.
And he's like, better. But there's just little things like that sort of make the film to me. And it could, you know, there are things about it. Another one of the things I will say about the film is I think the first act kind of, it front loads it with so much of the story elements mm-hmm. and then spends this kind of languid, lavish amount of time on Sakaar, which is the planet where Thor is taken prisoner and he meets the Hulk. I think there's a lot of story things that happen up front that are kind of dispatched with rather quickly
mm-hmm.
in order to get to get to the other things. But there are things in it that don't bug me. Like, there was a Doctor Strange cameo, the Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange. I wasn't a huge fan of the Doctor Strange movie.
No, but I loved his appearance in this film.
This was more Doctor Strange than the Doctor Strange
movie. Way more Doctor Strange.
This, you know, with the blink and they change locations.
Well, and it was nice finally see him at least in the same room as some of the other Avengers. It
right.
felt, I found like his, in comparison to all of them, it felt too separated from the other MCU films. I don't think the characters, which were all new within it, were strong enough for it to be enjoyable as a singular, not connected to the other MCU films.
Right. Hulk also helps with that. But yeah, the thing I found about the Doctor Strange cameo is I think the Strange movie was very, I mean, it was also an origin story, but mm-hmm. it was also very mechanical and like, this is how magic works and this is how all these spells work and things. And there's really kind of none of that here. He's just doing magic and it's just happening yeah. and you kind of roll with it. And I love the...
It's going to make me enjoy his character use in Infinity War more.
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, that's the other thing about the Doctor Strange movie I found is just, it seemed kind of like Iron Man, Doctor Strange, where it was kind of copying what had worked before with Iron Man, at least tonally and thematically. But here I felt like Doctor Strange was his own character, and that was nice. Because that scene could have just been terribly annoying, and it could have been just felt like something sneaked in there purely for the purpose of, again, setting up that of Infinity War stuff, and so that Doctor Strange has a pre-existing relationship with one of the other Avengers, so that mm-hmm. when he shows up, Thor can go, oh yeah, I know that guy, he's cool, he's mm-hmm. one of us.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just a small thing they need to do with him to make Infinity War more enjoyable.
Yeah, but it wasn't annoying at all, is my point. It fit like really perfectly into the story, and it felt like it didn't feel gratuitous at all.
It was one of my favorite parts, I'd say.
I would agree.
Filling up his beer was funny.
Yeah, just like, would you like tea? I'm not really a tea drinker. Okay.
But I am glad it was just him and the Hulk. I didn't need to see every single Avenger in the film. That's what I liked about Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get to get more attached to
You mean Spider-Man Homecoming?
Yeah, Spider-Man Homecoming. My apologies.
But I know you meant Spider-Man T-O-O, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, the Hulk... I liked the use of the Hulk. I liked the use of Mark Ruffalo, too.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Because we sometimes forget, you know, because Banner becomes the Hulk, which is kind of like one of these, like, weirdness aspects of the universe... that Bruce Banner is like a nebbish guy who, you know, is frequently in over his head. And so here he is on this alien planet freaking out.
And it's been a while since we've seen him.
Right.
I love him. I love the Hulk. I always have.
And that's one of the interesting things about that, the Hulk is like chatty because Banner's been the Hulk on Sakaar since the end of the last Avengers movie.
Yeah, the Hulk was comedic.
Yeah.
He was funny. I almost preferred Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk than I did as Bruce Banner. He's fun as Bruce Banner. He is.
And yeah.
I like the way he was dressed. He looked cool. But
Tony Stark's clothes.
Yeah, wearing Tony Stark's. I think Tony Stark is a fashionable man. So that was enjoyable. But I thought he was even greater as the Hulk. It was nice finally getting to see the Hulk say some funny things.
Yeah, that was great.
It was nice seeing like the Hulk and Thor being friends.
Yeah.
The Hulk and Thor. Not... you know, Bruce Banner and Thor, the Hulk and Thor.
It's interesting because neither of the characters have sort of match each other. Because Thor is very different from the Hulk, and Thor is very different from Bruce Banner. Mm. So they're not like kind of natural friends the way Bruce Banner and Tony Stark were in the Avengers movies. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, you have basically three characters and they're both odd couples. Mm-hmm. And having the Hulk in it... again, it felt really organic, and it didn't feel like it was. And that was one of the really great things that I think the Captain America Winter Soldier movie did, which also had one of the other Avengers in it, aside from the main character,
yeah.
Is that it felt organic. It just made sense that he would have Black Widow there as well.
It made total sense.
Although they have to go through kind of a bit more contortions to get Hulk and Thor in the same room for this.
But it did still
feel, it felt like a very natural pairing because, you know, the end battle is very much based on characters, like these very highly powerful characters. And so you would need one of the other very powerful characters to you know, be in the mix and survive the fracas. And you get a lot of great comedy out of the Hulk as well, which was really, really great to see.
I hope he finally gets his own film. Well, I guess his third singular film. the first one with Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that is overdue, again, like the Black Widow movie.
Yeah. Oh, the Black Widow one, yeah. But I think that's confirmed to be up and coming, right? 2020, I believe? Far in the future.
I don't think they've announced, like, the next slate.
They haven't for the Hulk one either. After 2019?
Yeah, I don't think they've announced what's coming up. There's... Let's go down the list. There's is Black Panther in February, which
the
looks
trailer
really great.
For Black Panther was fantastic. If you're not a fan of Thor, just go to see the trailer for that. It's great. The Black Panther one was fantastic.
Well, again, that's going to be another interesting change up because it's a predominantly black cast. It's a uniquely African centric superhero. Mm-hmm. Ryan Coogler.
Yeah, and it's going to be like Doctor Strangelove, where it's not majorly connected to any of the other characters, so it could go like Doctor Strangelove, but based on the trailer, I think it'll be a bit better. I think I will at least enjoy it more.
Yeah. So after Black Panther, I believe that is Avengers Infinity War, mm-hmm. and then there is Ant-Man and the Wasp after that, and then I think after that it's Avengers Part 4.
Okay.
And then the Spider-Man Homecoming sequel. And I think that's as far out as they have planned.
Well, I'm excited for all of that.
So,
and this was a good build-up towards the next one then, Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, that I think that's very connected. You know what ticks me off is that there was no Avengers Infinity War trailer.
I know.
They've had it since July because they played it at both D23 and San Diego Comic-Con.
So they have shown a trailer for it?
Yeah, at those events.
Okay, but yeah. I think probably it'll be around December, they'll release it publicly.
I I hate to say it, but I think it'll probably be in front of Star Wars.
Yeah.
To, for maximum synergy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're both owned by Disney, in case Marvel and Star Wars are both owned by Disney, in case mm-hmm. you're not aware of the corporate stuff. But yeah, it's that did disappoint me. There was no Infinity War trailer because it's been kind of built up for weeks and weeks and weeks, months even. I want to talk about the music.
Yes.
The music in this. The score was Mark Mothersbaugh,
okay.
which is crazy to me because he's someone who usually works with Wes Anderson. He's one of the collaborators there. He's not someone who usually goes for one of these like big, bombastic Hollywood blockbuster
Neither
things.
Neither is Taiki Waititi, though.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah. But, you know, so you have like these two these two weird outsider voices. But the sort of the synth score
made
it sound like an 80s like action movie.
Yeah.
The use of Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin, not only awesome, but appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Cause of
I think that song was the first one playing, like the second the movie opens, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
But then they also play it during the climax. So.
One of the things MCU is best at is the soundtrack.
Yeah, like the songs, the music supervision.
And especially the score, too, but especially for this one.
The score for this one, yes. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, the score seems like an afterthought in these
Marvel It's more
movies.
The actual soundtrack, especially yeah. like Guardians of the Galaxy. They pick great songs, but the soundtrack right. is very minimal.
Yeah, and they use Pure Imagination from Willy Wonka
yeah.
before Thor meets the Grandmaster. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that a lot, going down the tunnel. And it was really great. The music use was really great, but I didn't want to specifically reference the score because of these great like synth riffs. Like it was like Flash Gordon. There were so many chances taken with this that mm-hmm. I really appreciate because for a while there it did seem like Marvel was wholeheartedly invested in its formula. But lately, with Spider-Man Homecoming, they really shook up the formula with that. Guardians to an extent. And the other thing I'll say is that there were actual consequences coming out of this too, which is something else that Marvel's been kind of coy to do. Something like Civil War, the last Captain America movie, you know, where it felt like maybe a character or a couple of characters should have died.
Mm-hmm.
It's
getting to that point where at least one person, one major-ish character should pass away.
Right.
Otherwise, you'll stop caring about it. That's why people stopped watching Heroes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the only reason people stopped watching Heroes.
They brought back some of those characters billions of times.
But, yeah, I know where you're coming from. But, yeah, there were consequences to this. There were characters who you've come to know, not necessarily love, but have come to know, who did die.
Mm-hmm.
And there were going to be longstanding consequences going forward out of this. And that is something Guardians 2 did. They did kill off a major character in that one, too.
But the major character they killed in Avengers ended up being alive in the TV show.
Right.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so... I think one character needs to permanently die.
Right. But, I mean, it does seem like... I don't know if they're working their way up to it, but...
I think in Avengers Infinity War, there'll be a major character that passed away to help save the others.
Yeah. So that's something else I really appreciated, that it sets up... First of all, not to spoil anything, but it serves great closure for the Thor film series. Mm-hmm. But it also says that there's going to be long-term consequences going forward into that next film in the franchise series, which is Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
Because a certain somebody sees a certain something on his way out the door, and you know that's going to come into play in the next one.
It's not going to be good.
No.
But I think part of the reason why they did give more freedom to Taiki Waititi is... Joss Whedon complained about not having a super amount of control with Marvel. And if Disney saw all the complaints and they realized that they should give certain directors that people love, people view as like an auteur director, right? Like someone who's used to being a director, who's independent, who has a lot of control. So they've realized that. And I think that's why they gave Taiki Waititi a good amount of control.
Yeah, and I think that we've seen that with James Gunn, too, that when you are able to deliver, they will, loosen up the reins a little bit. And I think one of the long-standing, talking about franchise building, is that I think Thor – Ragnarok sort of feels very much, considering it's the same corner of the Marvel Universe with dealing with cosmic and space things, it feels like both Guardians and Thor are kind of in that same corner now. Before, they felt like kind of separate entities, despite the fact that they both deal in very similar realms.
Yeah.
But when he lands on Sakaar, and it's like this big junkyard where garbage is falling out of wormholes all around, that felt like a very Guardians thing.
Indeed.
And it felt like Taika Waititi, in creating this fairly original piece in the Marvel Universe, was able to somehow tie it closer to other things going on.
Yeah, they're getting us, they're making it so we get used to it, not, you know, all of them just being set within Earth, because the
right.
Avengers are eventually going to be all over the universe.
Right.
Universes. All over the place.
So that's Thor Ragnarok.
It was great.
It was great.
It really was.
And if you haven't seen it already, you should definitely make a date to see it. And we'll wrap up this edition of End Credits, saying that you can listen to it again on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can find us on social media at End Credits Radio Show, on Facebook, End Credits Radio, on the Twitter. Peter, where can people find you elsewhere on the internet?
Mr. Talarak. I don't know if anyone's heard me say that before, but Mr. Talarak. Twitter or Facebook or YouTube.
Well, people usually turn off the show halfway through. So. I'll be back on CFRU later today at 5 p.m. for news and politics on Open Source's Guelph, and that is with my partner there, Scotty Hertz. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where you'll find a lot of really great city budget stuff, speaking of serious things. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here next week, Thursday at 10 a.m. for more End Credits. We'll see you guys then.